case this morning, or now this afternoon, Walden versus Wilkins.
May it please the court. I'm Linda Stemmer, and I'm respectfully contending that the district court shouldn't have applied the Rooker-Feldman doctrine to justify a dismissal of our plaintiff's claims. Judge McKinney was correct when he said that the pivotal question in applying Rooker-Feldman was whether or not the plaintiffs seek to set aside the state court judgment or they're presenting independent claims. We, the plaintiffs, are presenting independent claims. One of the interesting points in this is that in the state court, our opponents argued that if the plaintiffs had a claim for taking without just compensation, then that should be brought in a separate action under the Tort Claims Act. They also argued that if the plaintiffs had claims that were connected to their violation of their due process rights, those claims need to be filed in a separate action against the specific transgressors. And now they're appearing to say it's not appropriate. Rooker-Feldman says that these issues are inextricably bound with the same decision that they argued that they should be separate actions. It doesn't seem that they can have both of those positions in the same case. Judge McKinney was correct when he said that Rooker-Feldman applies to a claim that has been raised in a state court. But being raised isn't enough. It has to be raised, and there has to be a full hearing, and there has to be a judgment responsive to the issues. In Robinson versus Ariyoshi, the Hawaii Supreme Court refused to address the plaintiff's claim for taking without just compensation. The Ninth Circuit Court refused to apply the Rooker-Feldman Doctrine in that case because the state court didn't address the Fifth Amendment argument on taking. In a footnote, the Robinson Court said, "We are loath to give less constitutional protection to plaintiffs who responsibly exercised their claims in a state court proceeding, but were turned away without any explanation. And as a result of that turning away, if the Rooker-Feldman doctrine were applied to say, because it was just raised, doesn't matter that it wasn't adjudicated, but it was just raised, then many of these constitutional claims would simply go without a forum in which to be addressed. Judge McKinney held that the issues of taking and due process were inextricably intertwined. With regard to the due process, he pointed to a footnote in the opinion of the Court of Appeals that said that Mrs. Stemmer didn't argue this shock the conscience argument cogently, and as a result, that's waived. What he didn't do is take that footnote and read it in concert with the appellate court opinion, which said, we only dealt with the validity of this order. We didn't do anything with regard to the execution of this order. And the issues that the appellants, that Walden raised at that level, were issues, if they had issues, constitutional issues, in the execution of the order, they specifically were not addressed. Page 43 of the appendix is the quote, the relevant quote in that. Judge McKinney went on to say that with regard to taking, if Rooker-Feldman applies because the court would have to deem that the original court's order was invalid before the court could give damages on the issue of taking without just compensation. It's important to recognize that the original court order only authorized removal of personal property. It did not authorize the agents of Wilkins, the health department, to go in, take these items, and convert them to their own use, to fail to account for them, and fail to give them back upon demand by the property owners. We're not asking that the appellate opinion be reversed in any way. We want it read carefully, and we want our day in court as it relates to the constitutional issues in the taking and the failure to give notice of this intentional act of taking that occurred in this case. One of the things that our opponents suggested in quoting the Exxon case, that quote is something to the effect that Rooker-Feldman applies when state court losers, and we acknowledge we did not prevail in the state court, but when state court losers complain of the judgment, what happened, the judgment. We are not complaining that the judgment was issued. The judgment gave the agents of the health department the opportunity to lawfully be on the property. But it did not give them the right to take this woman's things. And there is a distinct difference in that. In Long versus Shorebank, the court was very clear to call out a Fifth Amendment claim that was separate and apart from the judgment that was rendered in that case. And they did not apply the Rooker-Feldman doctrine to the issue of fraud. We're respectfully requesting that the court determine that the Rooker-Feldman doctrine does not apply, that the dismissal was inappropriate, and the case be remanded for further proceedings in district court.
Thank you, counsel. Stewart.
May it please the court, my name is Ian Stewart. I represent defendants Dunnick, Williams, and Wilkins. I have 5 minutes of the time, and then the co-defendant has the remaining 5 minutes. Regarding the Rooker-Feldman doctrine, where it applies is to basically say this court and the district court does not have jurisdiction to set aside a state court judgment. So the initial inquiry is, does the injury result from the state court judgment itself? Here, the state court judgment was a demolition order, that called for the removal of this mobile home, all personal property, and all debris. That's what the judgment provided. So the judgment called for the removal of all of these things. Under the judgment itself, plaintiffs were given 10 days after the judgment to go in and take anything of value that they wanted to take, and then after that 10 days, everything else would be removed, debris, personal property, and the building itself would be removed. That's what the judgment provided. It called for, basically, you have 10 days to take this property. If you don't take it, it's gone. The cost of the removal was going to be assigned against the plaintiffs. Now, that's relatively key because the judgment itself envisions, okay, you're going to be charged for the removal of all these property, all the debris. It says nothing about the question of, which is now raised, it's like, well, we could come back later and get it. If that was what the judgment envisioned, then there would have been some provision saying that you'll be responsible for storage cost. But what the judgment said was all debris, all property, after 10 days, it's gone. And if there was any question of what the judgment meant, then that question was resolved by the trial court itself later in its February 3rd, 2006, and its March 29th, 2006 orders, where the plaintiffs came forward and said, okay, well, we want our stuff back. And the trial court said, no, you're not getting the stuff back. That was done after a hearing. It was done after evidence was presented. The judgment, the October 14th, 2005 judgment, stood for itself. Now, what plaintiffs are attempting to do is go back and reopen that judgment. But as Judge McKinney has found, when the Court of Appeals found that the October 2005 demolition and removal of property judgment was valid, there was nothing else to decide. There is no issue left that can be argued, because the validity to go for damages as to how this judgment was executed, which the execution would have been the removal of the property, would be to go into the judgment itself and declare it invalid. And this court does not have jurisdiction to do that. And briefly, to the extent this court would decide it has jurisdiction, we have the quasi-judicial immunity argument that basically we have a valid order, which this court cannot strike down, and simply our people were moving to enforce this order. I'll let my co-defendants have the remaining time. If this court has any other questions.
Thank you.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. The district court properly granted the motion, both motions to dismiss, because the property owner's federal complaint, which is what we're now here on, in its entirety is a de facto appeal or a collateral attack of the state court judgment. Today the property owners have argued that the health department and its agents, being the barbers, were only entitled to be on the property as opposed to remove all the property. But the state court order itself is clear. It says that after October 24, 2005, although it gave after a 10-day period, the health department shall be authorized to remove from the premises the modular building and all personal property and debris located on the real estate. That order contemplated that in the 10 days prior, the property owners would have come in and got any item that they thought was valuable. Everything else would have been classified as junk or debris. This case is very similar to the Ritter case from this court. But for the demolition order, plaintiffs would have no federal complaint at all. Their mobile home would not have been demolished, and their personal property would not have been taken or removed. There is no independent action here. There is no independent cause of action that they're bringing that's separate from the state court judgment. It's not like in – actually, it's akin to in Long versus Shoreman. In that case, the one claim where they raised the due process claims, and the court said, no, this is not an independent action. This is the same action – as before. It's the same case here. They're not saying that the agents did anything improper while they were on the property, in terms that all the agents did was executed on the valid order from this court. Also, plaintiffs, the property owners are attempting to seize upon an obvious mistake in the Indiana Court of Appeals' opinion. That mistake, as was already addressed today, on the one hand, the Court of Appeals says that all substantive due process claims regarding the manner in which the order was executed or proceeded upon shocks the conscience. The court said that's waived. You didn't make a cogent argument. It's waived. That is a decision on the merits. Later on in the opinion, almost as a catch-all, the Court of Appeals says, to the extent that the property owners are entitled to any relief regarding their personal property, that relief must come by way of a lawsuit. Well, as Judge McKinney aptly noted, a finding that the order was valid, which is what the Indiana Court of Appeals did, left no room for the plaintiffs to come back and argue that their personal property was wrongfully taken, because the order allowed for the removal of all their personal property that had not been taken at that point. Also, plaintiffs' federal complaint the claims that plaintiff is making in its federal complaint were complete upon the order. The only thing left upon the state court order was the execution of that order. That's all that happened since then. In the alternative, we would also assert that res judicata would apply, which is a different doctrine than the Rooker-Feldman You know, these claims have already been litigated before the Indiana Court of, before the Indiana State Courts and the Court of Appeals, all the way through to the U.S. Supreme Court denying their petition for writ of certiorari. This was the same parties, the same, or privies to them. The Bakers are their privies, as they are the agents of the Health Department. And it was rendered by a competent court. It was rendered on the merits. The matter now in issue was or could have been litigated. We assert that they were litigated. But even if you give that to them, they could have been litigated at that point. And the prior adjudication was between the parties or privies. And also there's the absolute immunity argument that we were just enforcing the trial court's valid order that the Court of Appeals has already said is valid. If Your Honors have no questions.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Ms. Sim? How much time? You have 3 minutes.
We are most emphatically arguing that the agents of Donald Wilkins engaged in inappropriate behavior when they entered on that property consistent with a valid order. They did not have the right to take her concessions trailer and use it, convert it to their own use.
What did they do with it?
They took it, they painted it a different color, and they put their own names on it. They took a motorcycle and converted it to their own use. In fact, what the title, there is a title that is conveys the concession trailer from Ernestine Walden's dead husband.
Did you sue in the state courts for that violation?
The procedure in the state court.
No, just ask. Did you sue in the state court for the compensation?
No. In the state court, I asked that the order be set aside. I filed a 60B motion, and then I asked
you
to have the property back.
Did you file a suit for compensation for the...
No. That's what we filed here. That's what we were intending by this action. And there are some other things that are important. The notice, the court's order that gave them 10 days to remove their property because of an action by the attorney Dunning, that notice was sent to the property that had been vacated, ordered vacated. It was never sent to her in the transcript on that day. She lives in Redkey.
That would be the predicate for your state lawsuit for compensation for the loss, I take it.
And that's a part of our action that's filed in this case in federal court. It's all joined. Ms. Harriman said that, I'm sorry, opposing counsel, said that the summary denial, that the trial court's decision was the trial court just summarily denied the motion to set aside the judgment. The trial court just summarily dismissed the motion to correct errors. And the appellate court specifically said, all we're doing is dealing with the validity of this order. They specifically said, anything done in the execution of the order is for another day. And that's why we're here. This is our day. One of the best analogies for our issue is the Rodney King. Rodney King could justifiably be arrested, but he couldn't be beaten, handcuffed and beaten in following that arrest. And that's the distinction. The immunity was not addressed by Judge McKinney, but immunity only applies when you're specifically carrying out the act authorized by the order. And the order in this case only said you can remove. The court didn't give them the power to take these things. And we, representing Ms. Walden, had the right to ask for them back. And we did ask for them back. And in the name of salvage rights, we have salvage rights. They say we don't have to give them back. And our case, the failure to give notice of the order so that these people could go out and remove the property and prevent this situation, exacerbated it, made sure it would happen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case will be taken under advisement, and the court will be in.